Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Division 7 of the Colorado Court of Appeals, and we have one oral argument set for this afternoon. That's the case of the marriage of Phillips. I see that counsel are present and set up. Thank you very much, and we can begin.
May it please the court. My name is Jordan Fox, and I am here on behalf of appellant, respondent in the district court action, Mr. Paul Phillips, who is present in the courtroom. Three main issues are presented to this court for review, all of them dealing with the equitable division of property in a dissolution action. First was the trial court's refusal to equally divide wife's, appellee's, pension and abuse of the court's discretion. Second was the trial court's refusal to consider the depletion of separate property inherited by appellant during this action and abuse of discretion. And finally, was the court's requirement that I'll just refer to him as husband pay a portion of the mortgage on Weiss residence without classifying it as a support obligation and abuse of discretion. I'm going to start with the discussion of the property division. 1410.113 sets out very clearly that the court is to allocate marital property between the parties without consideration of fault after considering the following factors: the contribution of each spouse to the acquisition of marital property. The trial court found very clearly that everything the parties owned, except for a $120,000 inheritance, was earned during the marriage and was marital property. The trial court went on to find that it was equitable in this case to divide all marital property equally, except for this pension. Going through the other factors that the court has to consider, the value of the property set aside to each spouse. Again, the court purportedly divided all of the property and debt equally, except for this pension. The economic circumstances of the party. This is one of the areas where we believe the court made its most egregious error. The trial court set aside the property equally to the parties. Trial court also equally divided their incomes until the age of retirement. Its justification for awarding a $577,000 asset to wife on top of the equal division was that her circumstances were quite dire. What the trial court completely ignored is that the trial court had equalized the party's economic circumstances. Ignoring the pension, if wife's circumstances were dire, husband's were at least equally as dire, if not more so. So there was no factual or legal justification to award this pension to wife because of any disparity in circumstances. The trial court commented on the disparity of incomes, and yet with an equal income, there was no disparity. The final factor under 1410.113 is any increases or decreases in the value of property, and I touched on that in one of the three issues. Shortly after the petition was filed for divorce, husband inherited $120,000 from his father. Unfortunately, at that time, he also lost his job. At the temporary orders in this case, the trial court said, husband, pay all the debt and pay wife some money, even though the court was aware that there was no source to do that other than the $120,000 inheritance. And I'll touch on that in just a moment. The disproportionate property division cannot stand specifically because it deals with the division of a pension. The Casillas case mentioned in the brief makes it very clear that these type of pension plans should be determined if they're marital. The trial court said entire asset is marital, and then they should be equally divided. This asset happened to have been in pay status and was paying $3,200 per month. The trial court should have divided that equally between the parties, giving them each $1,600, and I'm using rough numbers, and then made the rest of its determination.
Mr. Fox.
Yes, sir.
If the court had done that, equalized the amount that each party was receiving from the pension, $1,600 each, instead
yes.
of $3,200 to what? And then the issue gone to the issue of maintenance. Now, the court expressed that it was trying to equalize the income, as you said, of both parties, and in doing so, attributed $3,200 to wife for the amount she received from her pension each month. Had she been receiving only $1,600 to equalize the amount of income between the two parties, the court would have then had to simply add $1,600 to husband's maintenance obligation.
Yes.
Wouldn't we be in exactly the same place?
No, interesting point, but no, we wouldn't be in the exact same place. And there are two reasons for that. First is that the anticipation was that husband was going to retire in 8 years. So if we had granted wife, equally divided the pension, and granted wife $1,600 more of maintenance, then 8 years later, they would still be in the exact same position, except now they're both retired and receiving half of this pension asset. Because the trial court gave or equalized the employment income, wife would have had the same opportunity to save for future pension as would husband, and therefore the only asset difference at that point of retirement would have been this pension asset. The other thing that the trial court, doing it as you suggested, and we had considered that, is the fact that if the court had divided the asset equally and then put a maintenance, higher maintenance in play, the subsequent actions or the subsequent events would have been equitably dealt with. This matter was remanded to deal with a motion to modify maintenance because husband lost his employment. So if the court had equally divided the asset but gave a higher maintenance obligation, then when that situation occurred, husband could have gone in and said, okay, I don't have any income now because I've lost my job, and the court is aware of the economy, but we're still receiving this asset equally. We're still in the exact same position. So after a long-term marriage, the equitable thing to have done would have been to equally divide that asset and make any adjustment based on the party's actual income circumstances at that time. On the factors that the court has to look at, the depletion of separate property has to be considered. The trial court noted that husband depleted $120,000 for marital purposes. And husband was placed in a situation, really, I called it a catch-22, that there was a no-win situation. If that inheritance had not existed and husband was forced to still fund the family expenses, the only source would have been to go into debt. The trial court found long-term marriage, equal contributions, we're going to equally divide the marital assets and we're going to equally divide the debts.
Yes, but that would not have been a marital debt, would it have been, counsel? Because it was, he was required to pay it in order to comply with temporary orders. Isn't that a separate property debt?
I disagree. And the reason that I disagree is that a large part of the funds that he was having to pay, the majority of the funds, was servicing existing marital debt. The court said pay child support and maintenance, and then also said,
well, how does that terminate? If you're required to pay whatever it is for temporary, to comply with temporary orders, you're supposed to get the money from somewhere. But isn't everything after temporary orders that you earn or that you have his separate property, and all debt that you incur after temporary orders, isn't that his separate property?
No. By statute, property and debts are divided as they are in existence on the date of the divorce. So by way of example, let's say that there was $1,000 paid per month in maintenance that was never used. And on the date of divorce, there's now a $10,000 bank account.
Well, hang on a second. I'm looking at 1410.113 2C, which says it's separate property is property acquired by a spouse after a decree of legal separation.
A legal separation really is no different from a decree of dissolution of marriage. The legal separation is the final decree in the case. Temporary orders do not create a legal separation. That can only occur once the case is finalized.
So it's your position that if your client had to incur debt in order to get the money to pay the $16,000 a month or whatever it was, maintenance obligation, that would have been a marital debt that would have gone on his side of the ledger.
It would have been a marital debt. I don't agree that it would have gone on his side of the ledger.
Well, a marital debt in any case.
Yes.
Do you have any authority for that proposition? Do you have a case that says that?
Again, I would refer the court back to 1410.113. I believe it's subsection 5, and I can look it up in a moment, that talks about that the property is divided on the date of divorce, not the date of temporary orders or the date of separation. I am not aware of a case that says specifically one way or another that debt assigned to somebody in temporary orders becomes their separate debt. I don't believe there's any case in Colorado that says anything is separate unless it was a premarital asset or debt. The depletion of that $120,000, I think, should have been taken into consideration. It's clear that it was found by the trial court that it was a separate property. It's clear that it was depleted for marital purposes. And the statute itself says one of the considerations in dividing property is the depletion of this separate property. The last thing I want to touch on is the mortgage payments that husband was required to pay. The mortgage payments in this case were added on to the debts that were assigned to my client after all the other debt was purportedly equally divided. The reason why we find this to be error is either it's a property debt that should have been divided equally based on the court's finding, or it's a support obligation. The only justification or the rationale that the trial court asserted was that this is being done to allow the minor child to stay in the home.
Mr. Fox, I just want to clarify. This relates to the line of credit on the Grand County residence.
Yes, it's a second mortgage or HELOC.
The first mortgage, the court ordered wife to be responsible.
Correct.
Okay. So in addition to that line of credit, you also have the mortgage and line of credit on the Denver home, correct?
And those were assigned to husband, yes.
All right. So your argument is limited to the line of credit relating to the Grand County residence.
Correct.
For a period of 3.5 years.
Yes. Okay. Works out to be an additional $32,000 of property awarded to wife because she's not having to service that debt. The reason that we believe that's an error is that if it was done for the benefit of the child, which could be a legitimate expense, I'm sorry.
I have another question. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but my question is, what's the basis for, do you have any authority for that there should have been a dollar for dollar set off or consideration for this depletion of the inheritance? The statute, as far as I read it, says the court needs to take it into consideration, but it doesn't say anywhere that it needs to be a dollar for dollar reduction of anything.
And I don't think it does need to be a dollar for dollar. I just think it needs to be considered and not completely ignored. And I think the trial court said it exists and you don't get any credit for it at all. And I apologize, my time is running short. I wanted to reserve a little bit. So just to address this last issue, and please forgive me. If the court felt it was a necessary child-related expense, then it should have been allocated between the parties equally or in proportion to their incomes, which would have been equal here. Again, since my client lost his job shortly thereafter, if it was a child-related expense, then that could have been apportioned or adjusted because it was just given to him as a property payment or a debt payment. He had no ability to modify that, then did not get an equal division of property, did not get an equal division of debt, as the trial court found was appropriate in this case. And I'll reserve the rest of my time for closing.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jack DeCola. My registration number is 5598. May it please the court, Mr. Fox. I want to handle a couple housekeeping, one housekeeping matter first. The child suffered from severe scoliosis. That appears in the record at pages 34, 35, and 36. Mother testified that the child needed an operation. It's a 12 to 14 inch incision down her spine, the removal of a couple of vertebrae, the fusing of these vertebrae together, and then titanium rods put on each side of that fusion. Mr. Fox said I did not cite that in the record with regard to the child's mental physical problems, and that's where it is in the record. I'd like to talk about the acceptance of the benefits of the decision. And I'd like to talk about that in light of Mr. Fox's comment in his brief that any of the other property allocations would not be affected by a change in the court's order. And the answer is, and I'd like to point out that at page 16 of the court's order, the court points out that since the court equalized the party's income, the court will order the parties to each pay 50% or $64,069 of the debt. Well, when the husband goes along with that and the court considers wife's income from her pension as part of her income, that is an acceptance of the benefits of this order. And if the, and he's now asked, he hasn't, he didn't ask for a stay. He didn't ask for anything like that. What he's done is he's compelled the court's property division with regard to Verso. That was the only job wife had. He compelled her to dissolve that. That was part of the court's order. And then he forced her to do it when she was going too slow. That was her only income, essentially, at the time. That was her only income at the time other than a pension. And he compelled her to do that. He then has accepted the benefits of all of these things that the court has ordered. Her paying the mortgage on the house, her paying all the credit card debt. He's accepted these benefits. It's really hard in these divorce cases where somebody says, I'll take the part that I like, and then I'll appeal the part I don't like. And this is a package deal in any divorce case. And if the package deal here was the court will divide the debts and divide the property based on the incomes.
Well, Mr. DiCola, yes. If I take your argument to its extreme, I think you're saying that you can't ever appeal a division of marital assets and debts. I mean, as long as some of it benefits you.
Well,
that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, if the court awarded him half of the pension, as Judge Jones was inquiring about, then what does the court do with the debt that the court ordered her to pay half of? What does the court do with the business, which the court ordered to split 50-50, in which he compelled her to dissolve?
Well, why isn't he entitled to appeal? He's appealing the property division, the way I understand it. He's raised certain portions of it that he's, but why can't he do
that? Judge Terry, the relationship between maintenance and property division is interwoven. And as the court knows, okay.
If we were to reverse, yeah. my assumption is that we would send it back and have the trial court look at everything.
Sure, but here but the problem is that the rights under the case law, if the rights to benefits already received will be affected, then he's accepted the benefit, and that's what he's done. He has accepted all the benefits of all these debts that the court ordered jointly paid. That's the case law I've cited at my brief. Right. He's accepted those benefits. And he's accepted the benefits of wife paying 50% of the bills. He's accepted all these benefits. And in this case particularly, because the division of debts and the allocation of income was based on wife's pension. Now, remember what happened here, too, in terms of just the big picture. When this case starts, husband is making $17,000 a month. $17,000 a month, okay? When the case ends, he's making $10,000 a month, okay? She's still retired, okay? Although she's working at the party's wine store that the court ordered essentially dissolved, okay? That's what the parties have. The court made findings that this is husband's ability to earn, okay? And her whole decision is based on his earning history, which is replete in the court file, his earning history. And that's the kind of money this guy makes, and she's retired. Now, there was one other issue I wanted to talk about.
Counsel, let me just stop there. So, as I understand your colleague's argument here, the court's order is premised on the principle that the income, assets, debts, property should be divided equally. Do you agree with that premise or disagree with that premise? But that was the court's objective and aim.
The court's objective was to equalize incomes and equalize division of property, but for the pension. The court specifically said, I am not going to divide her pension equally. The court specifically said that. Okay? So the court starts out to divide the assets except for her pension, but then gives him credit against his maintenance obligation. For the amount she's receiving from her pension. And I submit, based on his earnings, for the remaining life, if he goes back to his shown ability, he'd earn $1.6 million by the time he retires. Okay, if you take $190,000 a year, thereabouts. So he's got this earning ability that he's demonstrated, and she's retired. It's one other point I wanted to make. No, it doesn't matter what the court calls the payments on the mortgage. The court specifically, there's a statute that says the court shall consider awarding the house to the party who has the child. That's what the statute says, and that's what the court did. The court's basis of her decision, all her reasoning, is well set forth. Oh, it's with the pension. It's with this premarital stuff. The inheritance, the case law, on the inheritance, we argued this, and it was not appealed. But the court may consider income from an inheritance, just the way you treat an ordinary income. And that was not raised in the appeal. They raised it sort of in a different way, but it was briefed in the motion to modify temporary orders. So if you've got an inheritance and you're spending that is included in the definition of income for child support and maintenance purposes. It just is, okay? So that's like saying, so when Mr. Fox argues, well, you should get credit for that money he spent, well, the answer is, there was income to him, and he spent it as maintenance and child support and debt payment, and he should not get credit. Because at that time, again, he's making he's got that kind of money. It's ordinary, it's income, just like any other income, even though it's inherited under the statute. And that's all briefed and argued at the motion for temporary orders.
Well, why isn't it briefed in your brief and on appeal?
He didn't raise it on appeal.
But he did raise it on appeal.
Well, what he said was he should get credit. It should be a debt. It should be a debt to him. It should be a debt to him, and I don't think that's the same thing. Okay, that he should have, because the court did consider it. Because what the court said in her order was, look it, you would have spent this money anyway for the same thing. You would have spent this money anyway for the same thing. But all I'm telling you is it's income. Okay, and it's like what you were asking, Judge Terry. If you've got income, income is income, whether it's from an inheritance or whether it's from earnings. And that was all briefed, and it's all. I don't think he made that issue on appeal. I think he said something different.
Well, all right. I need to understand this, Mr. DiCola, because I'm looking at the same statute I discussed with Mr. Fox, and that is 1410.113.2c. It says property acquired by a spouse after a decree of legal separation is separate property. Is this inheritance separate property because he received it after the temporary orders?
No, Judge. Judge, that's completely the wrong statute. What that statute you're looking at is about is that for the purposes of after acquired property, a legal separation is the same as a divorce decree.
Okay.
That's what that statute's about.
All right. So okay.
I think you look at the definition of income under 1410.115. And under 1410.115, money you inherit can be income.
What subsection, please?
It's a definition of income, Judge. I don't have it right in front of me.
Mr. DiCola, I'd like to clear up something else on the record.
Yes, sir.
There seems to be a disagreement as to how the equity in the Grand County home was divided. The court or your opponent represents that your client received all of the equity, which was $48,769. But the last line of the court's order regarding the home says, the court will divide the equity in this asset equally between the parties.
She did that all through her order, Judge Jones. And I think what she did was, with that, I think that's the accounting she was doing. In other words, let me see if I can explain it. Because she does it all through her order, and that's the only place she does that. She takes $48,000 and puts it in the pot, okay? Even though she takes $48,000 and puts it in the pot, she puts that whole $48,000 on my client's side of the ledger. Does that make sense?
Not really.
Let me say it another way.
I think I understand what you're saying. Are you saying that essentially, other than the pension, the court was equally dividing the assets?
Yes.
So that all the other assets are essentially equally divided. They may not be drawn down the middle as to each particular asset, but the bottom line, if you add up all of those other assets, is going to be about the same.
Right. And when she does her accounting, like she would put $48,000 to be divided. And put that whole $48,000 in her side of the ledger, on wife's side of the ledger.
Okay.
Judge Chair, I'm ready to sit down unless you want to ask me another question. I think Judge Jones may have interrupted you.
Well, I'm looking at 1410.115, and I do see gross income includes income from any source, and it relates to child support. So how does that relate to the issue of whether the husband should have received some, even
sure,
if not
sure.
a dollar for dollar, some sort of a consideration from the trial court in making this property division.
And the answer is that the temporary orders have not been appealed. At temporary orders, the court found that the money that husband had received as an inheritance should be counted as income, and she did that.
She said that at temporary orders?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Judge Terry, I would refer the court to 1410.113, subsection 2A, as opposed to 2C, for the definition of inheritance as separate property. The section dealing with 2C really is all post-decree, and the decree was the final order that was entered in this case.
We're going to give you some extra time, so don't hurry, but tell me which statute you're on. I'm sorry, 1410.115?
113.
113.
You were referring to 1410.113 subsection C, which is defines any property received after a decree of legal separation as separate.
Right.
And I would just suggest to the court that a decree of legal separation is identical to a decree of divorce. Literally on the form, there's two boxes, and you just check one versus the other.
Okay. So which subsection are you wanting me to look at then?
Subsection 2A.
2A.
Property acquired by gift, bequest, which is inheritance, device or descent.
Okay.
The first thing that I wanted to address was the disability. The court's order very specifically found that this is a child is an avid soccer player, has a very active social life. The child is not disabled, and there was no testimony that she was disabled. The benefit of the order argument, what we're asking the court to do is to send this back to the trial court or just order that the pension be divided equally. No other assets need to be addressed. Everything else was divided equally. Judge Jones, you're correct. Essentially, $48,000 from one asset was placed on wife's side, $48,000 from other asset was placed, doing 20 or 30 different assets, it equalized at the bottom, except that it didn't really equalize because after doing that equalization, $577,000 was added to wife for the pension, and another $32,000 was taken from husband as part of his obligation to pay the HELOC or the second mortgage on wife's home.
Mr. Fox, I want to turn to the liabilities aspect of this just so I'm clear on the record. I just did a little math myself, and I'm not going to represent that it's completely accurate, but it looked to me as if the court ordered wife to be responsible for about $100,000 more of liabilities than husband. What is your recollection of that?
I think that you need to net out the liability and the asset. I believe you're probably referring to the mortgage on the home.
I'm referring to all the liabilities. When I went through and totaled up all the liabilities assigned to wife and then all the liabilities assigned to husband, I came up with about $100,000 differential, wife having to be responsible for more.
The court found that there was 100 and I'm going to be off in some of it, 120,000-ish of marital debt, exclusive of the mortgages on the properties. The court then assigned each party roughly $65,000-$69,000 of debt in its statement to equalize the debt. The real estate, what the court did was said, there's a $300,000 home, there's a $250,000 mortgage, that's a $50,000 asset. Mm-hmm. The court did make the comment that it was trying to equalize the amount that each party had to pay for mortgages. But what the court failed to understand when doing that is that then put more cash flow into wife's side of the equation than husband. And when the court makes the comment that I'm giving wife $577,000 more because of her dire circumstances and then ignores the fact that she has created an even more dire circumstance for husband, that I believe should meet the definition of an inequitable division.
Counsel, let me stop you right there. Now we're into what they call it, penalty time, I guess, in soccer.
Overtime.
My understanding is whatever time you want is what you get.
Did I characterize your position fairly when I said that the premise seems to be that you thought the court was intending to divide things equally but just didn't get it done? Is that really the underlying argument here?
Yes, and I think the trial court specifically stated that that was her intent.
Now, your colleague seems to respond that, well, the court intended to organize, to divide most of these things equally, but intended not to divide wife's pension. And that was to make up for the disproportionate earning power that husband yet has. How would you respond to that observation?
That is what the trial court stated. What the trial court then went on to do is take away the disproportionate earning potential, because by equalizing the parties' incomes, there is no disproportionate earning ability. The court did note that husband's earning potential was around 120, did note he at one point had a job at 180 a year, 180,000, but also noted that wife's earning potential, a job a few years before the action, was at $100,000. So yes, wife, as counsel said, was retired. She had been retired for a few years, and there was no disability asserted to her that would prevent her from going back to work. So the real issue in my mind to address your question is that because the court equalized their incomes and even specifically said, if husband makes more, come back and ask for more, the intent, or the observation at least that I took it, was your income shall be equal until, Mr. Phillips, you retire. And therefore, there is no disproportionate earnings potential, and therefore, there's no legal, factual, or equitable justification for the awarding of 100% of that pension asset to wife.
Thank you.
I think that's actually it, unless there's another question.
I think that does it.
Thank you.
Thank you. The court thanks both counsel for their arguments. This case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes this afternoon's docket. The court will be in recess, and the bailiff may so announce.